This is Jody Apple.
Let's continue our series of studies this week, Why I Believe in Jesus. We introduced a line of reasoning that Michael Shermer used in Skeptic magazine many years ago, in which he was defending the historicity of the Holocaust. We are using that same line of evidence to demonstrate the historicity of the Christ. Unlike the urban legend that we began with, this historical case study is significantly more important. Furthermore, the introduction of this idea of a gathering of evidence has introduced a method that will serve us well as it applies to our study of the historical Christ. Having introduced this idea, but without taking the time to develop it fully, let it simply be noted that there are multiple lines of evidence that can be assembled pointing to the conclusion that the Bible is a reliable historical witness and that Jesus was indeed a real historical character. Those lines of evidence can be both broad and specific. From a broad perspective, those lines of testimony or evidence would include at least the following. First, archaeological evidence. Second, textual and manuscript evidence of Old and New Testament versions, translations, and so forth. Third, the biblical record itself. Fourth, geological records. Fifth, arguments for the existence of God. Sixth, arguments for the inspiration of the Bible. Seventh, secular evidence, that is, records from outside the biblical text. Eighth, historical records of contemporary Old and New Testament places, events, and persons, and other lines of appropriate study. These constitute broad lines of testimony. From a specific perspective, the lines of testimony might incorporate numerous lines of evidence presented as a cohesive unit in one passage. For example, when we launch into a study of John chapter 5 and John chapter 6, we encounter within those two chapters a biblical example of convergence. Here, Jesus proves who he is by and appeal to, first, his relationship with his Father. The Son does what he sees the Father do. Whatever the Father does, the Son does. The Father shows him, the Son, all things that he does. The Father raises the dead. So does the Son. The Father commits judgment to the Son. The Son should be honored, as is the Father. As the Father has life in himself, so does the Son. The Son seeks the will of the Father. Seeing the Son is tantamount to seeing the Father. And, by the testimony of John the Immerser, better known as John the Baptist, John the Baptizer, he is known by that testimony, by his own works, by the teaching of Old Testament scriptures, and by the testimony of Moses. All of this and more validates the biblical claim concerning the authenticity of the Christ. And all of these are found in John chapter 5 and John chapter 6. When such a case is fully assembled, incorporating all the necessary broad and specific viewpoints, it would lead to the conclusion that the biblical record is a reliable historical witness and that Jesus was really an historical character. Let's look now at contemporary evidence. Approaching our problem from the vantage point of contemporary evidence seems like a difficult thing to do. How can we know anything in the past based upon what we know now? That seems to be a very reasonable question, deserving, of course, of a very reasoned response. David Hume, a philosopher that lived from 1711 to 1776, created a system of thought to rid us of all allusions to the supernatural. He denied, in theory anyway, that there was a concept of cause and effect. At the very least, he was very suspicious of it. He opined that our witness of the same events following in specific sequence was nothing more than contiguous events occurring without a causal connection between them. So, what appeared to be related was nothing but one event following another, and so on. He further argued in his criticism of the miraculous in this fashion. No one living today has seen a miracle. In addition, no one living today knows anyone who's seen a miracle. By establishing such a uniformitarian view and extrapolating his observations into the past, Hume allowed that miracles never occurred. There are several notions wrong with David Hume's thinking. If, according to Hume, someone living in the tropics never observed snow, nor ever knew of anyone who ever observed snow during the immediate and past generations, then that person would never have reason to believe that snow existed. But we realize, hopefully, that it is possible to demonstrate the reality of snow without having experienced it ourselves or conversing with someone who has. We can read about it, we can see accounts of it and documentation of it in film or videotape coverage, or see photographs of snowy landscapes. Furthermore, in his denial of miracles, Hume created a scenario whereby he was denying the past beyond a generation or two. What are the mechanics by which we determine that a person or an event has historical merit? How do we know, for example, that any person living before our time, without our direct witness, actually existed? My grandmother, on my dad's side, died approximately 3 years before I was born. Of course, I never physically saw her, but I have sufficient evidence to demand that she really lived. The testimony of her husband, whom I knew personally, and that of her five sons and daughter, whom I knew personally, as well as testimony of her friends, documentary evidence, photographs, court records, birth certificates, death certificates, marriage certificates, hospital records, and so forth, all of those things corroborate that she actually lived and actually walked on this earth. As we move further back into history, the same principles apply. My father's grandfather, whom I never met, has an historical record all of his own, subject to examination, evidentiary examination, in much the same way relatives closer to me in time are to be studied. My grandfather knew him, so in that sense, I am able to maintain a connection to my grandfather's father. The difficulty, as we move further back in time, in some cases anyway, relates to the abundance of the evidence and the critical issue of judging that evidence to be worthy enough to warrant the conclusions that we would like to reach. I know, because it's not possible to have occurred without this assumption, that my grandfather's great-great-great-grandfather on his paternal side must have existed. But I don't know, at least not at this point, who he was, what he was called, where he was from, or any number of specific traits that would identify him as that particular character occupying a place in my family tree. But should I engage in a study of such information, genealogical studies, he could and would be conclusively identified. There is a way to connect the past with present knowledge. David Hume's other argument, which in effect denied causality, is also faulty. It seems that it is just as easy to assume a disconnect between historical accounts of record as it is with actions and reactions, even in our own time. There are, however, undeniable contemporaneous historical accounts that connect the past with the present. Consider these thoughts by William Foxwell Albright that we mentioned earlier. Physical phenomena doubtless exist without the intervention of some person to observe them, but they are certainly not known to man unless man is present when they transpire and is able to recognize them as they transpire. Moreover, past physical phenomena cannot be directly known either, but require the intervention of some indirect instrumentality of cognition. Exactly the same is true in principle of history. Current historical phenomena are known to those who are in a position to recognize or to comprehend them. The historical past can be known only through the intervention of an indirect instrumentality of cognition. He goes on to say that the physical and material past of man can thus be recovered by substantially the same methods as are used in geology, paleontology, paleobotany, and related fields. From a knowledge standpoint, archaeological data are just as contemporary as are the facts that are gathered laboriously by astronomers through telescopes and spectroscopes and so forth. Albright's point is weighty. When a paleontologist examines evidence, fossils for example, he is examining them in the present. The object he presently holds in his hands has a connection to someone or something in the past. He knows, from earlier studies and investigations, that it is not evidence from the recent past, but rather from the early part of the 11th century. He compares it with other evidence, both physical and documentary, and he begins to build a case for time, place, association, and so forth. From a knowledge point of view, the data that he studies is just as contemporary as the discovery made the day before of a new planet. It is in this way that the past speaks to us today. All such data, whether scientific, literary, or historic, are not known immediately, but rather can be known only through the intervention of an indirect instrumentality of cognition. Our knowledge, while indirect rather than direct, places history on the same knowledge footing as it does science. The emphasis here is on the understanding of past records in both history and science from a contemporary vantage point. Most evidence, regardless of the discipline, is past evidence. It might be seconds, minutes, hours, days, or years old. Regardless of its origin and time, it is contemporary from the standpoint of those who must access it and assess it. Thus, we have an immediate connection with the past by means of this kind of physical evidence. For our study, the contemporary, yet still ancient witness of history is most telling. Through archaeological digs, as well as the study and translation of ancient documents, the past remains alive in the present. Our assessment of this type of evidence provides a key connection with what has happened in the past. Hume's denial of cause-effect in the present and his denial of the miraculous in the past falls short of dealing with the witness of the past that shows up in our time on a regular basis. The proper study of this evidence yields the conclusion that we can know historical truth, even the truth about the historical reality of Jesus the Christ.